SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races. Ed DeRosa is going to join us. And as we bring Ed in, I do want to remind or note that there is another stake that we have not mentioned. You talked about Tampa, gave you a little tip to that. But at Parks tomorrow, the Pennsylvania Nursery and Field of 10, 100,000. And we bring it up, our man Gary Young picked out Call Paul for Michael Dubb. And, of course, this Frisian Fire Colt, third most recently in the Nashua, third in the Champaign, won the Saratoga Special, and he's going to take advantage of the Pennsylvania breeding, and he'll be a short price in the Pennsylvania nursery. Certainly he's the nine. Trevor McCarthy gets on board for the first time. And that horse that Dave Grenig referenced, Motown Charlie Brown, that was the horse that was in the race with Maximus Mischief, and when he turned up in a maiden 40, LC Racing and Butchie Reed scooped him up, and he broke his maiden that day, and he's a Pennsylvania bred, and he's going to try this spot. And of course, the Charlie Brown story with Fantasy Lane, pretty amazing. And really, Uptown Charlie Brown has gotten his share with a limited opportunity. One of those fun breeding stories. Bring that up with Sid maybe next week. But this actually is a good group. Butchie's also got Splice the Main Brace, a Poseidon's Warrior. That's obviously a nautical reference, Splice the Main Brace. And this one is coming out of a series of good efforts. Broke his maiden against state breds, and then a couple of open company allowance tries, seconds, and 5-1 on Splice the Main Brace. So a nice feature tomorrow, the two-year-olds in the Pennsylvania nursery at Parks. Ed DeRosa joins us, and we've had to chase Ed all over God's green acre. Good morning.
You found me.
We did find you.
Hunting me down. Yeah, good morning.
And your thoughts, we just had James, your thoughts about the closing of the Churchill meet with the Stars of Tomorrow 2, really a fun, I thought, top to bottom, a really fun day. I signed on for all 12 and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would say that's a good sort of emblematic of the meet. Stepped on the gas with Stars of Tomorrow 1. Then it was Breeders' Cup week and competitive racing throughout. Of course, the single six getting hit on Stars of Tomorrow Day. And I talked to the winner, and he didn't want his name out there, so wasn't really able to write too much of a detailed story. But not sure if he saw the ticket when I posted it, but it was a $105 play, and his big lean was in the last. And he told me he was shocked that horse was 2-1. Coming out of a Breeders' Cup race, and paired up Signal Man, who James liked in the Kentucky Jockey Club, and obviously caught a little bit of lightning when he was three deep with the biggest prices there. So congratulations to him on a $500,000 score. And, really just to me, part of all the excitement of the meet with the big payouts and competitive racing.
Any further, anything else that you can impart? How big a player, how regular a player, some other elements about the kind of horse player that he is?
Yeah, definitely a regular. Dabbles in the jackpot bets, when he feels like maybe there's a shot with some bigger prices that he likes. Never come close to a jackpot score, but he did say, back in 1988, so 30 years in the making, he feels this is finally his revenge. He had 5-6 on Breeders' Cup Day and missed Easy Goer, I should say missed Is It True, and he said he's been chasing that pick six ever since, so feels like he finally reeled it in, and he no longer holds a grudge against Pat Day.
Yeah, I guess there's probably still some people.
Changed his mind about giving his name out because I'd love to write out that story and read it to him. But yeah, he's been thinking about chasing that pick six for 30 years and finally reeled it in.
Well, even if that's as much of the story that is going to come out, that's encouraging, and it's a lesson, or certainly a goal, or something for people to feel good about, especially in light of what transpired Friday, Ed, where some people said, "Oh, whoever was holding that ticket that would have won the $300,000, they'll never get that back." Well, this little story kind of flies right in the face of that.
Yeah, no, it's always an opportunity in racing, and happy for this guy. Definitely sounded like a lifelong player, and certainly at least a generation if he was playing back in the mid-'80s. So
absolutely.
Yeah, kudos to him, and he's, like I said, a regular, a Twin Spires customer, which is how I was able to get a hold of him, and great to talk to him, and looking forward to, the big scores under the Twin Spires. We'll have to wait till April, but hopefully, maybe some things at Fairgrounds, and looking forward to the upcoming Oklahoma meet, and of course, claiming crown this weekend, kicking off the championship meet at Gulfstream, produce some big payouts too, I'd imagine.
No doubt. All right, cool. I'm glad. Glad we had a chance to touch on that. Let's turn our attention to whether there's a couple of horses that stood out to you, particularly on the 2-year-old card. Anything that you noted that is going to stay with you as we start to think about Derby and Oaks Trails?
Yeah. Well, I looked at the future wagers pretty closely, and ended up playing Vekoma and Maximum Mischief. Those were my two.
Nice.
Individual play. So looking forward to seeing Maximus Mischief in the Remsen, and he is my pick in there. But Vekoma just thought was brilliant, and maybe, given the trainer, who's certainly a capable horseman, but maybe not the household name on the Triple Crown Trail, I thought maybe there was some built-in value there for a horse who has not only done nothing wrong but also been fast and doing everything right. So took a shot with him, and then their respective sires, even though they were shortish prices, I just couldn't resist both Candy Ride and Into Mischief. Their numbers, looking at the average Brisnet speed rating of, and I narrowed it to winners, and then I looked at maiden winners as well. They're easily tops in their crop. So I just felt like at the shorter price, you're just getting so many animals. They cover big books. They already have some potential stars in their crop. So on the sire side of things, I went with Into Mischief and Candy Ride.
I thought the Quality Road price was inviting.
Yeah, good. I mean, I didn't plunge, but More Than Ready and Quality Road were two I took a long look at, and probably at the price was worth. I feel better about people who got involved than I do about me not getting involved. So those were the two on the high end I thought were worth a look.
Definitely. They're fun. And the sire wager has been a nice addition. And, of course, Scat Daddy had his last – it was pretty funny. He got his last crack at it and pulled it off. So that was last year. And that was an example of – why it's worthwhile to look at them, and even if you just put a small, even if you just throw 10, 20 bucks, it's fun action, and it gives you something to something to root for.
Absolutely.
And the best is when you forget about them, and then all of a sudden you look in your account, and there it is.
that happened to me.
Yeah. Well, let's with the Oaks winner with
Monomoy Girl.
No. A couple of years ago, the one with Boo Boo.
Kerwin Clark. Proud Spell.
No, it's after Proud Spell, but not too far back.
Oh gosh. Cause to Believe. No, that's the sire. This is shameful.
It is. I'm not sure why I can't remember. Now I'm gonna have to go back and look.
I need to look that up. Believe. man.
I got the greatest text just now that, Eddie, you got to get a hold of the pick six winner. And Gary Barber says, tell the pick six winner he's welcome.
Oh, does that mean Gary was the one who missed on Friday? Or did he have the
He owns the horse. He pushed.
That's a great text.
I love it. I love it. Thanks, Gary. we've been talking about Warwell this week, that we assume that they'll go on and move forward on the dirt with him for now.
Definitely see no reason not to after that.
I love it. That makes me laugh. Well, let's dive in and catch up, Ed, on some ideas for the weekend.
Yeah, I don't have anything on the claiming crown yet, but I will point out that Gus Alonso has spotlight picks up for both the Aqueduct and Gulfstream cards, and we have our big place bet promo where if you sweep the card, you share in one pot, and if you have at least half the place horses at Gulfstream, you share in the other half. So that's a very popular promo, and happy to offer it on opening day at Gulfstream. But I did look elsewhere. I already mentioned Maximus Mischief in the Remsen, who I just think is the fastest and definitely prefer his breeding at a mile and an eighth to some of the others. In the Cigar Mile, I definitely am pushing the chips in on Pat on the Back. I look at that nose loss to diversify at a one-turn mile. I look at the 100-plus BriskNet speed ratings, which are competitive with some of the best in this group. And, of course, I look at the 15-1 and feel like I have to take a shot. Among the favorites, I definitely prefer Coppertown. I've sort of seen this movie before from Pletcher with the likes of Liam's Map and Army Mule, and we know he can get horses ready for this type of race at the one-turn mile against top quality, and Coppertown looks to be top quality and should sit behind the Chads and Mendelsohn and get the right trip along with Pat on the Back. So that's how I'm approaching the Cigar Mile.
You know, and Dave Grenig, Dave kind of was hinting that the long shot players could tinker with Pat on the Back, and you know, particularly in this kind of a layout going the one turn, you're not alone with your inkling here.
Hopefully doesn't get too crowded, because you know the price is definitely part of the attraction, but impossible to see him being too wise guy with Mendelsohn and you know Coppertown and two Chads in there. And
right.
I've heard some buzz on Sunny Ridge, which I certainly understand, but at 9-2, that's a little light for me. I'd rather swing a little more with Pat on the Back.
I hear you.
And then a couple more esoteric ideas. Looking at Fairgrounds, that has the Shearer Memorial for Philly sprinting on the turf. I'm going to try to beat excessive spending. I don't love her giving 6 pounds in this spot. She certainly fits, but I just think one last shot for Michael Stidham off. It is a long layoff, but she performed well in this race last year off a shorter layoff. It was a few months. This is a bit longer, but Stidham's numbers are fine in that category. And I just think if he has her ready, at 6-1, she's running up good races, even off the layoff, that compete here. And one last shot's the pick on top. But I will say, numbers 11, 12, and 15, should that one draw in for Sharp and Mischitza, I think all three offer value. I think there's a lot of speed in here, and those three look to get stalking or mid-pack trips and should stay out of trouble from the outside and not too worried about losing ground just around one turn. So I'm going to try to beat the favorite here, and one last shot's the most logical for me.
Okay.
And then in the Holiday Inaugural, definitely can't ignore the stakes race Turfway tonight, not tomorrow. This is tonight for those looking for a play later. But number 9, Goldberry, 10-1 on the morning line, has some speed, drawn on the outside. And what's interesting about her, it's her synthetic debut, and being by War Chance out of an Empire Maker mare, not too concerned about that, and plenty of turf pedigree plenty of turf performances to say this shouldn't be an issue. She's only run 6 furlongs once, and that was on debut on the dirt. And with that pedigree I just mentioned, I definitely see no problem in her stretching out. Maybe the speed becomes even more of a weapon for her on the outside. So 10-1, Goldberry's the play. Numbers 1 and 3 make sense, but I ran the post numbers for full field to Turfway sprinting. And down on the inside has not been ideal. There's definitely a drop in win percentage with 10 or more horses going 6 furlongs at Turfway for the inside horses. So between that and Goldberry maybe just having an advantage on the outside, I'm going to shoot for the bigger price.
Yeah, I don't blame you. And absolutely, for those that watch Turfway, you see all the time the horses that are outposted seem to do fine. It's got that Philly Park look a lot of times. Nice. Well, I knew we couldn't resist a look at tonight's first stake at Turfway Park.
Yeah, and they've been paying there, and it is race 6, so it's out of the pick 5. But last night there was just one winner for 18,000, and none of those horses were impossible. You kick it off with a Tommy Drury special with John McKee up, and you're off to the races. So definitely can get some big payouts there, and we'll try to get one in the pick 4 with Goldberry.
There you go. And it took me long enough, but it was Lovely Maria 3 years ago that we couldn't think and paid $80. And Tina and I were driving back from Derby, and I pulled up my account, and I was like, where did this come from? And it was from punching a Oaks ticket on Lovely Maria. So that was at $81. Ed, have a great weekend. Glad to catch up. And
absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Yep, my pleasure. We'll talk next week.
You got it. Ed DeRosa, everybody. And we'll take the 20-minute break right here and come back and check in with Hammer. And Rick, of course, had to tap dance away from his usual Thanksgiving. Had to swing around. We talked about his trip to Florida last week. Now he's writing the condition book for opening day at Santa Anita. And I'm just looking at the calendar, looking ahead. So today's the first, so obviously 25 days away. And opening day will be the Wednesday, the 26th, obviously. Day after Christmas, Boxing Day. Back after this, check in with Hammer and Nick Tamaro yet this morning. Weekend preview at the races. Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine. California.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. Coming back after a nice visit with Ed. We missed him the last couple of weeks, so it was good to catch up and got a couple of opinions. It's always nice to get like a consensus when you have a day like tomorrow where, you know, the main premium racing is at one venue. And so you get the opinions. Nick Tamarol will join us next. But you had Ed, you had James, you had Dave Grenig, Jay Bribman touched on the Remsen. And it just, you know, it's interesting when particularly when it comes to people kind of overlapping on an outsider. You know, and it's funny because as a player, as a horse player, and I'm sure most of you can identify with this, a lot of us will identify a long shot, especially if you're a fairly new player. And Hammer will chime in on this, and I'll bring it up with Nick Tamaro too. And if you're only at a certain level or a certain experience level as a player, you get an inkling, you see a horse in the paper, looking at the PPs, and you say to yourself, boy, I think this horse can win. It's 20-1. And, you know, you might bring it up with friends and they say, ugh, that horse can't win. And, you know, and it intimidates you. So a lot of times people, and then people will bet conventionally and be infuriated when their original opinion comes through. The horse that they thought was going to run well at a price runs well. And you don't injure your long-term development as a player and by doing that. If you've got an inclination, there's something, and if it takes hearing from Nick or Hammer or whoever, you know, to reinforce your opinion, that's cool. But don't be shy when you have those, you know, those kinds of notions. Rick Hammerly, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning to you, and good to see you. We missed last week, a rare miss. But that's all. It was all good. I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving and all that stuff. But we're getting – I heard you mention a little bit earlier, it's November 30th. Tomorrow's December 1st, which means we're getting close. So I've been out of town a lot lately, and it's good to be back home. But it was good to be away. I was able to cross an item off the bucket list last week or the week before and went to OBS for their day of racing on Tuesday, I guess.
Awesome.
The 20th, so that's last week. Yeah. And I could only do one day in a row of Disney World Gina, well, I could have, but anyway, Gina goes, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to Ocala. because I'm going to go see Tommy Ventura, and there's actually racing today. So, she knew that was a no-win situation there. So it was actually very cool. I'd never been to the sales grounds there before, and it was like a county fair, cooking hamburgers out on the lawn and, selling beer out of an ice chest. And, they had some race, quarter horse races and a couple of thoroughbred races. It's one of those deals they had to run to keep some kind of license going, like they do
right.
in Florida. But
right.
but they didn't. It wasn't a rope drop race, and it wasn't a two horse races. It was, but it was fun. It was like I said, it was actually pretty cool to be there for the first time. The weather was good, and anyway, so I it's amazing how us horse players or people are in the industry. If we're near a track for any reason, somehow you just end up there. And the car just goes there, and that's what happened. So next year in November, if you're looking for something to do and you're down in Central Florida, I recommend it. I'll put it on the list. But
well,
fun.
And Tom's done an amazing job. The OBS team, continues to modernize and expand, and the renovations, and things are after a bit of a scary lull. Things are quite good in Ocala again. And
yes, and I was amazed at just how big it was, and it looks like how functional it was and modern, and except for the few places around there in Central Florida. But I was impressed with the whole area. So anyway. Come back in town. We're probably going to miss the press release that's going to be put out in about a half hour regarding the Graded Stakes and what happened, so I can't talk about that, but maybe if you want to come back early next week and go over some
okay.
stuff, that'd be fine. I just talked to Andy, who puts it out, and I said, when's it coming out? He said, probably about noon, and I said, that's fine, we can talk about it later, but we had our annual meeting for going over the races Monday or Tuesday and Wednesday of this week in Lexington, and there were some actionable items. So we'll just wait until that comes out, and then we can discuss that further whenever you want to. I'll be glad to go over
okay.
whatever we can, but we didn't make it. Didn't make the press release. So like I said, they like to do their deal, which I get, and then we'll go over. And, speaking of, we had some rain here yesterday. I mean, a lot. And, the poor people or that unfortunate people that involved in areas where the fire was, it's amazing that combination of fire and rain can be devastating. So we're getting over that. Del Mar was off the turf, a rare off-the-turf day for Del Mar. I just talked to them earlier. I believe they're going to be off the turf again today. And expect to be on for the weekend, the final 2 days with the two grade ones going. So I think the rain just stopped down there. But every once in a while it does rain here, and most of us need it, a little bit of it. But the news is covered with all the mudslides and all that stuff. But anyway, we're here, and we're kind of getting. I kept been here for about a half hour. I can't see the bottom of my desk because I'm getting ready to, which is not uncommon. I'm a, but getting ready to write the first condition book. We'll do that this weekend, and so got to turn those engines on in the head and get ready for that.
Well, and everybody getting excited. I'm going to come in for a little advance visit, and we'll be broadcasting from Clocker's Corner next Thursday and Friday. And then even Monday the 10th, so our first round ahead of the start of the meet, and of course as part of going to Los Al next Saturday for the Futurity and the Starlet, which are both shaping up well.
That's what I heard. I saw your name on the billboard here as I was driving in. Big coming to town. So
yeah.
That's great. You usually do, and I usually run down and we do a Friday show from the press box down there, but... there's going to be, things will start to be cranking up here a little bit. So you probably made a good choice coming up here to Clockers and be a lot more people here to choose from.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the problem at Los Al, not that it's a problem, but they're where they congregate, their Clocker's Corner is really in the same place, and it's actually quite nice. For those that have never been to Los Al, there's a terrific breakfast nook and a patio where Art Sherman is holding court every morning, and it's quite a good option. It's not as expansive as Clocker's Corner, but it's okay.
Yes,
but it's way
is.
Up the stretch.
Good.
And it's way up the stretch, though. That's the one problem. It's far away from where I got a broadcast
right.
from.
Right. I almost forgot. When Del Mar ends on Sunday, we do a couple weeks at Los Alamitos before we get started here. So I think they end on the 16th, if I'm not mistaken. That's that Sunday.
Yeah, that's that Sunday.
Okay, it gives us a nice... The longer the gap before our meet, the better things are. I mean, obviously, it's as we race here year-round, so any gap is very welcome. But this nice 10-dayer before we get going here just freshens everybody up. I mean, think back to way ago when first started coming here. After Del Mar, there was a gap. You can think of that. I mean, we didn't race here. Hollywood didn't have a meet, and Oak Tree wasn't even here. And you talk about starving, but that's when they used to go up to Bay Meadows and run a little meet up there. And then Oak Tree came along and picked up October, and then years later Hollywood did too and filled up those gaps. So for me and what I do and people that work in the racing office, any gap is welcome in racing to rest up.
Absolutely.
You want to start. Yeah, like I said, it gets, especially this time of year, everyone, and you know how it goes. If you don't have a rest, you don't rest. I mean, and that's horse players included and everybody you go. So it's almost like a forced rest right before Christmas. And then I think that's what whatever genius 75 years ago said, let's open the day after Christmas. It's, to tell you what, it's worked.
And that's a great point. You get the horses get a freshening, and of course there's no turf at Los Al, so there's a gap between Sunday and your opening, so all the turf horses will be ready to run, and it helps give you a big roaring start to the meet. And we'll look forward, we'll talk more about it when we're together. Hammer, one note. Talked about it with Jay Privman, who originated the story when the news came out that Frank Miramati was, or at least the first news was that Michael Rona's contract was not going to be renewed, and then days later, the formal announcement of Frank Miramati. Obliged to get some thoughts from you.
These things are never easy, never fun. Michael's does a great announcer. Very nice man. Things happen in this business and all businesses. Contracts are renewed or they're not renewed. I know Frank was hired, and I know Tim had shown some interest in going in another direction. And Michael's contract was not renewed, and I think it's just as simple as that. As tough as it can be, we're all in this position. We all work in this game, and things happen. We've all been had to move or moved for different situations, and definitely Michael did a great job while he was here, and Frank will continue on in that tradition here at Santa Anita. So, I heard about it when I was in Florida, and that's a decision that's made, and like I said, it's never easy, but it's part of business.
Understood. All right, I just wanted to ask some thoughts about the stakes at all. You got a Hollywood Derby opinion?
I tell you what, after just besides that little stint at OBS, it's kind of taken a mental break here with some of the races and handicapping. And I tell you what, it's a good thing to do to free the mind, and you come back and look and after 3 days or 2 days of looking at every single stake and that's running the country and every horse that's running the country, it's like it went from nothing to operation overload. So, but not in that fashion. And usually when I'm off, I like to get into the handicapping mode because it's the only chance I have to do that. So I spent some time last night looking. Now, remember, the turf's going to have a little give to it. I don't think it's going to be a bog because it's not going to rain the rest of the day, and it won't rain through tomorrow. But it will be. It would probably be good. This is good on Saturday, which most of our horses out here don't have any experience on it. So whether that's good or bad, just something to take note of. And it's funny. We can have all the races in the world on the dirt. There's nobody coming west or facing our guys on the dirt. But put up some grade ones on the turf, and boom, here they come. So we have, I think it was five invaders. I use invaders in a nice tone, but five invaders for the Hollywood Derby, and seven for the Matriarch, which is great. Adds a little spice to it. And as we don't have to tell the our listeners, when Chad Brown shows up, you pretty much start there. And decide which one you like, if not both or three of them, and move on from there. But the Hollywood Derby got some real good horses from out of town have at it. Who was here in the Twilight Derby and didn't stay here. It looks like he went back and then came back. Ran a good second to our number one three-year-old turf horse, especially distance horse, River Boyne. He's on the rail today. He does have some experience on an track with a little give to it, so we want to take a look at that. Also shipping in, of course, is Raging Bull. And you know what? I heard, I forget who he was talking about, Instilled Regard a little bit ago, but, you know, you just, you wonder what's going on there. And if you're using some pick threes, pick fours, you know what? Just put the little X by the horse because, you know, Chad knows what he's doing, and maybe he found something. Maybe, you know, he jogged him on the turf or did something that just said, hey, you know what, let's go for the turf. But Giroux comes out to ride. That's pretty wild. So, you know, I don't toss him completely. I'm not going to use him. You know, wouldn't use him on the top myself. But interesting. George Weaver's here. Carrick, the winner of the Secretariat at Long Odds, comes back after a disappointing run in the Turf Classic. So, you know, a very, very interesting race. The locals, of course, I told you River Boyne has been our best going. Have at it, ran good with him. I've always liked this horse, Kazan. He's done well. Del Mar did not get to embarrass himself too much in the Twilight Derby. I think this horse has an upside as a little bit of a price play, and I'm gonna use him in the top three. But you know, Raging Bull is a tough one, and obviously he likes a soft turf as well. I heard you mention at the end about, you know, using long shots and you know, going ahead, but at 100% right, you do to develop any type of you know. Prove yourself in this game that you could bet. You have to have confidence in your selections, even if they are at midnight the night before. If you've done your work and you've seen enough races and things, sometimes you just see that little trend that maybe you haven't seen in 6 months, and you go, you know what, I like this. That's why sometimes I like the handicap horses without the odds. They don't get swayed. But the horse is 20-25 to 1. Go to the window. The first thing I do is I'll just bet, you know, maybe 10 and 10 on it or something, just so I have a bet on it, and without, you know, having the horse win and not hitting the gimmick. But you need that confidence. You can't let other people talk your way out of it. You can listen to them, but you need to. That's how you grow as a handicapper. You take a shot. I mean, and even on this show here, when you have guys on, and you know. I don't consider myself, quote, a handicapper. I look at horses. You know, it takes a little bit of a ball to even mention a long shot sometimes. You know, I say, oh, boy, what did that goofball see on that? But that's part of it because you have calm. You saw something that sticks out in you. So you got to have the confidence to go to the window. I never understood, you know, early on, it's like, well, as the odds kept going up, I had a friend who kept betting more. And I'm going, right. What's this guy doing? I didn't get that. And I find now, like on Breeders' Cup Day, I made my biggest bet of the day on that filly that I like, La Force. She was 25-30 to 1. I said, "This, I like the horse. I bet more on that horse than trifecta as everything else than I did on, you know, Stormy Liberal." And because that's who I liked. I saw something I liked, you know, didn't pan out. But, I mean, I felt confident doing it, and you know, she didn't run well, and oh well, I moved to the next page. But you got to have confidence in your selections, or you'll just never make it. As you know, you'll never win. Well, that's the way I feel. So anyway, Kazan is one of those ones that kind of stuck me. It stuck out. I like the way he performed down there. He likes the Del Mar turf, and it's going to be a bomb, and I don't know if he can keep up with these, but he's not disgracing himself to these by any manner, so I do like that one a little bit. And the Matriarch came up real good. Grade 1 mile, Lavasse Grade 1 turf mile for fillies and mares, and boy, they came from all over the place here. Our local filly mare division for years has been good, not great, kind of beating each other. Fawn Mora has found a home out here in California. Vladimir Sarin's done a great job. She's going to be on the lead, forcing the lead, especially from her inside post. I was when I went through the PPs, I was actually kind of shocked, and I got a when I saw Vasilika in there. I mean, this horse has just been unbelievable. What a job that Jerry's done. I mean, he claimed this horse for $40,000 in February. And his horses won 8 in a row, including 2 starter handicaps that we let her slip into. But, I mean, just gone right up the ladders, won at a mile and a quarter, a mile, mile and eighth. It doesn't matter. And, I would say, put a few bucks on her. I mean, just fascinating. I don't remember something like this happening recently with just the meteoric rise of this horse. But anyway, Basilica's in there, going to face some tough company from the east. Mission Impassable, really like the way she ran in the QE2, and I'll keep an eye on her. She's a 3-year-old, but look at the Chad Brown horses we got here. Uni is the one that looks good for me with Joel Rosario, who is kind of shifting his tack here for the start of Santa Anita. So he's well known out here. He won a couple riding titles years ago, and he's going to come back home and test the waters again here. So he always does well when he's here, well liked. You'll see him get a lot of mounts, but I like the fact that he jumps on this one for Chad. I like him her the best of the three, and Donna Bruja. Is probably the one that I like the best. So, when they invade in the turf here, especially in the fillies, I like the out-of-towners, and that's the way it goes. We'll end up good on a flurry, and like you said, that might be the last turf race that we see until December 26th.
Exactly. Hammer, I appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Good luck putting the first condition book together for the horsemen out there, and I will actually see you before Friday. So we'll see you as early as Thursday.
So we'll announce the calendar giveaway officially together on the show.
Nice. Perfect.
When we see you.
Perfect. I love it.
So good to hear your voice, and enjoy the last day of November.
Hammer, I appreciate it. Rick Hammerly, everybody. Away they go on your Twitter, and appreciate Rick reminding, too, that later after we get off the air at noon, watch for the press release on the American Graded State Committee and see what movement there was here. We're going to move for the last 15 minutes to Nick Tamaro. Nick's on the road. He's in ATL, and nice to catch up with him, and we'll get his opinions of the action in New York. A couple of quick reminders before we get off the air, because we'll run out of time. Don't forget that this afternoon as well, you've got the last hours on the RMTC halter auction, and don't forget there's also the NTRA free contest tomorrow for seats, 5 seats, NHC, and no entry. Yes, it's a grab bag, and there'll be 2,500 people playing, but 5 of you are going to win seats. So take a shot. Nick Tamaro, good morning.
Steve, how are you?
I'm good. You must play. I bet you play. If you didn't have the 2 seats wrapped up, you would throw an entry into the free contest.
I'd probably play like all ones or all fours or something like that. I'm just not an online contest guy. No, I would handicap and try. I've done it a few times. I actually know a few people who've qualified that way, and my hat's off to them. Boy, that has got to be about as difficult as any way with that many people and just one set of races.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you're a tour member, you should play.
Well, I think no I, I, I I think Jim Sebas has, I think once or twice has gotten a seat.
Yep.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, Jim has, and Christian Helmer's won one outright.
How about that?
Got 2,000 plus people.
Well, you know, you can't make up a reputation like that. You actually have to go out and do it,
which
he does.
You got a lot to live up to.
Pretty funny. Let's dive in, and we'll rifle through and get your opinions. Go through the stakes tomorrow in New York. We'll start there.
Yeah, we can work backwards, given the Cigar Miles, the headliner. And, you know, you were joking with me, and I saw your text and was busy and didn't reply right away. But this is a Cigar Mile where this field might be as evenly matched as any we've ever seen. There's really very little separating the best from the worst. And you've got an interesting group, given that Mendelsohn will cut back to the mile, which might actually be his ideal trip. You've got Pattern Recognition coming off a bit of a dressed-up Kelso win, but he was freshened so that he could go here. You've got Coppertown, who beat a very, very weak field last time at Keeneland, but did so in incredibly impressive fashion, breaking poorly, getting stuck well off the pace, sweeping past the field and drawing away. And you've got Sunny Ridge, among others, who was a good second in the Kelso when running squarely against the grain of the track that day. It was a very good rail on that particular program. So it's a good bunch. I like Sunny Ridge. I'm going to bet Sunny Ridge, who gets Irad Ortiz back on. He was one of the horses, and we talked about this coming out of the Woodward. He was one of the horses who ran against the flow of the race, given that he made a bit of a middle move and advanced a little too early. That was a race that ultimately collapsed. And, of course, the only horse that we saw run in any proximity of that pace and still finish in the frame was Leo Frick. And so we've seen what he's done in two subsequent starts, whereas Yoshida came back and was good in the Breeders' Cup Classic, but maybe not quite as good as when he had gotten that big pace set up. So I'm most interested in Coppertown and Sunny Ridge from a little bit of a value perspective. I'm not going to be beaten by Mendelsohn in this race, because I think the mile, as I alluded to, might be just exactly what he's looking for. And if he's able to get out and establish the lead and look to maybe try and slow the pace down a little bit, he can be extremely dangerous, as I imagine both Jose Ortiz on Pattern Recognition and Javier Castellano on Coppertown will be perfectly happy to stalk and pounce from just a little bit outside of him. So tremendously interesting group. I'm really, really looking forward to see how it unfolds. But while Vekoma is not in the Remsen, we do have a good two-horse matchup between Network Effect and Maximus Mischief. For the purposes of multi-race plays, I don't really know where else you're going to want to go besides those two, unless you want to be a little bit clever. And I know there'll be a lot of people that want to bet Jungle Warrior, given that he's by Kentucky Derby winner Animal Kingdom and out of the mare Harissa, which makes him a half to Timber Ghost, who's a horse that moved into the care of Jimmy Jerkins, owned by the same connections a couple of months ago, and had a big win, couple of wins in a row between Saratoga and Belmont. But I think you're going to ultimately boil down to Network Effect and Maximus Mischief. Maximus Mischief is 2-for-2 and has really never had an anxious moment, but has also set kind of moderate paces against really weak competition. So does a 7-furlong race at Parks, where he got away with maybe some slow-ish fractions. Does that indicate that he really wants to go a mile and an eighth against a legitimate graded stakes horse like Network Effect, who came back off a bit of a layoff after an impressive maiden win and was huge in the Nashua? Ran a very good second to Vekoma, looks like a horse that should stretch out with no issue, seems to really have that one-paced kind of grinding style that lends itself well to a 9-furlong trip. We've seen Chad Brown do well in the Remsen over the years as well with a couple of wins, so I'm looking forward to whether he really steps forward. And maybe if Maximus Mischief gets some pressure on the front end, could be from Tax, could be from Gladiator King, that could certainly juice things up a little bit and would make it a lot of fun to see that skirmish maybe in the final quarter mile. Marley's Freedom shows up to the Gopher Wand in a bit of an unexpected move. I saw her continuing to work after the Breeders' Cup. Actually wondered if they might try the Cigar Mile, because her best races do put her right on par with the best horses in the Cigar Mile. On paper, she completely overmatched. Everybody is overmatched, given that she's in this field. However, you've got a few that might have a little bit of a tactical advantage. Benita Bianca is a horse that has hinted at some ability in the past. I know it was against New York Breds. She was very, very good last time. and now moves into open company, but has not disgraced herself in similar circumstances in the past and is going to offer a little bit of value. She should get a good trip stalking outside, maybe a little bit off the pace that figures to be set by Sower with Tigalalu in somewhat close attendance. So that feels like a pretty honestly run race, and I think a lot of people are going to end up using Marley's Freedom as kind of a lone A in any of the late horizontal wagers. So that's one where if she's up to her last New York performance, they're all running for second. The Demoiselle is earlier on the card. It's not exactly loaded with quality, but it's an interesting race given that Enliven now stretches out in distance. I shouldn't have an issue with that whatsoever. This horse is a half to Enticed, who obviously made a splash as a two-year-old, running very, very well in the Champagne and then came back with a couple of good performances in the spring, including winning the Gotham. We'll see if Enliven is quite up to it. I believe she should be. It would be very surprising to me if she doesn't beat this field. Looks like she's just really kind of got him over a barrel on paper. Motobella is not without chance. Did run a good second in the Rags to Riches to Mother Mother, who was a pretty impressive winner from the Bob Baffert barn. And she should get a good trip as well with a little bit of pace figured to battle in the opening stages. I think Joe Bravo will have Enliven in a forward position the whole way, and I kind of expect her to get the job done. That comes during the early pick five, which has a few turf races in it, encouraging that we're going to be back on the turf today. Hopefully there's a little bit of turf tomorrow pending the weather. So definitely a good way to kind of close out the meat of the New York Stakes schedule and the meat, really, of the New York racing calendar. Still some racing left to go this year, but the best of it kind of takes place tomorrow.
Let me ask you, too, Nick, did you get a chance to do the seventh, which obviously second leg of the pick five and the first leg of the pick four, and it's a good group. It's a conditional group that is going six on the grass, and there's a couple of prices that I thought need to be considered and included on the multi-tickets.
Yeah, there were some interesting horses in there. You looked at the overnight and saw some of the horses in there going six furlongs on the turf. It was sort of like, what is he doing going six furlongs on the turf? And I mean by that a horse like Tosk. And I know Toughest Hombre cut back last time to seven, ran into horses that were just a little bit too good, but he never really struck me as much of a six furlong horse. I wanted to give Almismar another shot. He's just kind of proven to be sort of only of one other than on the dirt. And this is a horse by Tap It Out of Gotta Have Her, who landed in a really salty one other than at Belmont back on the day before the Belmont. That was won by Raging Bull, who of course went on and won the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame and the Manila, and is going to be the favorite in the Hollywood Derby tomorrow. So this is a horse with a ton of turf pedigree who maybe didn't quite get on the turf at the right time, and now is a little bit better horse later on in his three-year-old season. So I wanted to try him. I'm definitely going to use him prominently. Adonis Creed is another horse who I didn't really expect to see at six furlongs. I don't know what necessarily the thought process is there, but I do know that Brad Cox is so good going route to sprint on any surface that I'm not going to be beaten by him. I also felt like Blessed Halo is a horse that I wanted to use, given that he has a ton of pace, and we might see this late autumn, early winter turf course be a little bit kinder to speed than it generally is. So I want it to be about three or four deep, figuring that Marley's Freedom is probably going to be a lone A for me on most tickets, and I don't plan on going more than Network Effect and Maximus Mischief as A's in the Remsen. Then I can use my four A's in the Cigar Mile among the main contenders, maybe press Sunny Ridge a little bit, and then still be in position in the last race to have a few options. Because that, and we should probably touch on that too for anybody making a multi-race bet, is a pretty salty bunch if you don't trust Quest for Fire. And Quest for Fire comes back off a lengthy layoff after really turning heads in his maiden breaker on debut for Charlie Baker. He's been off since March. This is a barn that's done well with horses off of layoffs in the past, so it's not going to be any surprise for him to come back well. Charlie Baker may have a lock on it no matter what happens, given that he has Smoke and Platinum as well,
who
ran a good third last time. Hung a little bit, but certainly had to go against a pretty slow pace that day.
You got that Wrong Ben in there as well to look at from Hennig. We've actually talked about that horse because of the two Bens, Right Ben and Wrong Ben. And Wrong Ben is okay, and he'll certainly be part of the pace picture. And the other horse, by the way, going back to that seventh, I thought Fear had to be looked at, the figure to get a good outside trip in the flow, kind of stalking up close.
Yeah, I think so. This obviously about the sharpest cleaning outfit you're ever going to find in Jimmy Riccio, and Jeremiah Engelhardt's done well for him. Jose Ortiz getting on as usual for that outfit, and being on a yielding turf course, it probably wasn't necessarily as yielding as it might have been labeled, but this is definitely a weaker field. You're not going to see the likes of Dowsers yeah. Beach in this bunch.
Exactly.
Dowsers Beach is going to be one of the choices in the Claiming Crown turf sprint tomorrow.
Anything, we got about 30 seconds, Nick, anything else floating around that you got in your back pocket?
I like Rich Daddy in the Claiming Crown Jewel. I don't want to give away too much, but I'm going to focus my action in the last race on him.
Very good, and we will rehash it next week, and say thank you, and safe trip home, and I got some other things for you, but I guess I'll save them for next week.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Nick Tamro, folks, NTAM, NTAMM, 1215, and that means 1215, that means December 15th. A week from, or 2 weeks from tomorrow, Nick's birthday. So those of you who have cashed with Nick, send him a birthday greeting or send him a present. We'll appreciate that, right? We appreciate everybody that cycled through, Hammer and Nick and Ed DeRosa, James Scully, Jay Pribman, Dave Grenig. Nice weekend of action. The scratches are up for New York. I'll make adjustments. I've got the Naira Betts pick 5 carryover addressed. And once we get Golden Gate's scratches, I've also got the Stronach pick 5, which I think also is plenty approachable. Leaning on Jeremiah, in fact, in that first leg in the 8th race, home run maker. Let's get that one to touch them all. That would be a great start. Good luck this weekend. Talk to you Monday at the races, Sirius XM.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.